Here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Three Women, Three Ways, and we are here to share an hour with you talking about things that matter in lives of women. We have, there are three of us, and we each come from these topics from three different standpoints, three different life experiences, and we'll start with Pinkley this time. I usually go to you first, Deborah, but I think we'll go to Pinkley this time first, just to shake things up.
I think that's a wonderful
So, Pinkley, tell us who you are and why this show is so important to you.
Well, good morning, ladies, and good morning, listeners. Well, first of all, the show is important because it's a way for us to interact in a way where we can share our conversations and information that we it comes so naturally for all of us, or the three of us, when we're talking about surviving domestic violence and violence in the world. I come from a survivorship and working in the field of sexual assault and domestic violence for the last 15 years. I have a bachelor's degree in social justice from the Evergreen State College in Thurston County, Washington. And it's just a pleasure to get together and listen to each other's perspectives and how very similar they can be and yet so different on certain topics that we've talked about in the past. How about you, Deborah?
Hey, good morning. This is Deborah Adams, and welcome and hello, especially to you, my sisters, and our listeners. We're thrilled to be together. We decided to do this show, I think, Heather and Pinkley, because we discovered that when we got together and had the conversations that although there were so many similarities, there were many differences of opinion, and we thought, well, that is just something that needs to be shared because anyone who's experienced violence, of course, has felt the isolation and the aloneness. So if the three of us who knew each other pretty well could discover things that we didn't know about each other and still be friends, we thought that would be an excellent format for our radio talk show. So my history is a long, long history. My tagline is, I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked at. And the it I'm referring to is domestic violence and actually all forms of violence against women. And I'm a late bloomer. I went back to college at 45, and I have a bachelor's and a master's. And I'm worked in the nonprofit community as an anti-domestic violence advocate. So, back to you, Heather.
Well, you know, I almost jumped in when you were saying why we decided to do this show because we, you know, whenever we'd get together, we'd have these diverse opinions and yet similar opinions. I thought we decided to do this show because we could never be quiet.
Well, that was a good
thing. We had so much
too
to say. Well, I come from this from a little bit of personal experience, and then I also, you said you were a late bloomer, Deborah. I'm a later bloomer than you are, and I am still in school, and I'm taking my last class before I start my dissertation in organizational psychology with a focus on domestic violence, and I really, which surprised me before I went back to school, I really find the studies and, you know, all the research that they are doing in this topic of violence against women, I just find it fascinating and I find it enlightening and I just love talking about some of the new stuff that they come out with. And with that in mind, we decided today to have a little bit lighter topic than some of our previous ones. We've all read books, either for school or for our personal use, and all three of us have a little library of those books that we found most useful. And we decided that we'd just have a very casual chat today about some of those books. One of the things that I do is whenever I encounter a situation, the first thing I do is go look for books about it. So that's what I did about domestic violence. And I didn't find a whole lot. And then I started encountering women in the area and women through shelters and things like that who did have a more extensive library. And as I studied and took some of my classes, I found even more. And now I have this library where I think, wow, how did I even manage before I read all these books? Pinkley, do you have a book, or Deborah, I don't care who it is, do you want to jump in with the first book that you'd like to talk about today?
I think we should start with the self-healing, if you don't mind, because rather than the academic, because that's actually where my whole process of, after leaving an abusive relationship, which helped me return to a sense of feeling human again. Do you girls agree with that?
I do.
Yeah, one of the things that, and I so appreciate the healing aspect of it, but one of the things that I think is really helpful is just to point out, if you are experiencing, for our listeners, an uncertainty about whether or not your experience, experiencing abuse, control in a relationship, I'd like to just point out a couple self-help books. And for myself, I can speak to, that's where I went to, was a bookstore trying to define what my experience was to get validation or information. And one of the books I found to be really helpful is a book called The Verbally Abusive Relationship.
Bingo.
I'm just kind of doing like this little timeline in my head. It's gone from self-help, trying to identify what was happening to me. There's also so Patricia Evans defines and really helped articulate for me what I was experiencing. And then it was the I'm going to get really angry and mad and find out what is going on with these guys. Like, what's happening to me? And then I went into the self-healing aspect of it. So I think my little book library of books is really interesting. If I was to categorize it in some way, it would be through discovery, understanding, and healing. And then, of course, the academic learning and the things that I've picked up along the way as far as through work and through school. So that was how, when we thought about talking about books, how I was categorizing it in my mind of the library that I have. So,
well, I find it interesting, Pinkley, that you started out with the verbally abusive relationship, because I got to tell you, I think all three of us chose that one, didn't we?
Yes, that's right here.
I'll tell you, that verbally abusive relationship was absolutely pivotal to me, because I think, as many people believe, I knew domestic violence was being hit. I didn't understand that there were other ways of being abusive and violent in a relationship. And when I came to that conclusion via outside intervention, the first book that I got was The Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognize It and How to Respond to It, and it is by Patricia Evans. And she just spells things out so that it is so clear, and almost every page I went, yes, that's exactly it, yes. And I think one of the things that really stuck with me is that she's got a chapter, I think it's chapter 2 in that book, and she talks about, well, she starts out with a quote from A World Without Spirit is a Wasteland by Joseph Campbell. And that is exactly how I felt, that I had no spirit left. And then she goes on to explain that there are two kinds of power. There are two kinds of power. One kills the spirit, the other nourishes the spirit. The first is power over, the other is personal power. And to me, I mean, that just snapped together so many things in my mind, that whole idea of power over, that killing the spirit by powering over. And, of course, as we continue to learn about domestic violence, we understand that it's all about control, or you could say power. power over, control over another person. So there were so many things in that book, and I think I ought to say it again, The Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognize It and How to Respond by Patricia Evans, that were just so enlightening to me. I'd like to give the phone number.
Go ahead.
I want to give the phone number so people can join us. The phone number is 1-646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. We already have a couple of guests in our chat line. Please join us there. We'd love to hear what you have to say about this topic. And I kind of stepped on you there, Deborah. So
No, I'm glad you did that. Anybody wants to join us, we certainly enjoy that and appreciate their input. I was thinking, because I chose this book as well, Pinkley and Heather, so if that's not powerful endorsement, three of us giving a heads up for this book. I read it a long time ago, and when I first read it, I applied it to my work relationships and my extended family. I didn't really apply it to me. And as I was reading it, of course, I saw a bazillion ways to relate it to my personal abusive situation, too. And then I just kind of recapped this book not too long ago on my Blog Talk Radio show, which is Deborah Says, Self-Empowerment Strategies. But on page 134, I underlined, put asterisks, highlighted. I just was like,
I have the same passage as the highlighted. I wonder if we did the same thing.
It was just so important for me to read this, that verbal abuse is a violation, not a conflict. And there may not be a solution. Those two things were like stars in the sky for me, because I thought I was in conflict. And realizing that there's a phenomenon called verbal abuse and that it's a violation of a relationship trust and communication was so important for me. It really enabled me to turn my world upside down, basically. Is that what you were going to say too, Heather?
Well, I had several passages there. One of them that I underlined on the very same page is, when you are ordered to do something, you are being treated as if you are not a separate individual to be consulted or asked. You are being treated as if you had no boundary, nothing to separate you from the abuser, as if you were his extension and instrument of his will.
Oh, my gosh, I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah. And then there was also a little passage about, if your experience is being denied or discounted, the abuser has invaded your boundaries. I think her words are so clear. I don't know about you ladies, but I was always so iffy. I knew I was so uncomfortable. But when I put those little tentative toes in the water to try to talk to somebody else about it, it was always like, well, everybody argues over money. Every marriage has difficulties. Every marriage has disagreements. But I kept thinking, this is more than a disagreement.
Right.
And when I read those words from her, it was just like, that's what it is.
Yeah, everybody kept saying, well, that's an argument.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a normal part of being in relationship. And I'm thinking, it isn't. It doesn't feel normal. It doesn't feel right.
No, because you're being overpowered. Your perspective doesn't matter. It's just being stepped right over.
Yeah. And I ended up just like, therefore, giving up any opinion I had or any feelings I had about a subject when it would turn into that kind of what I now call a verbal assault. How about you, Pinkley? Is this conversation resonating with you, too?
Well, what I find so incredibly interesting listening to our conversation is that this was, it sounds like, a pivotal moment for all three of us, which I find very, very interesting. And nowhere does it say about being physically assaulted, which is, I mean, it might in the book, in the context of the book, but the verbal abuse, just those words resonated and validated and affirmed, wow, verbal abuse? I didn't even know that there was such a thing as verbal abuse.
You know what? You're right, Pinkley. She never talks about physical assault. And the only place that I found in this book, because I have it marked and highlighted and flagged, is page 19. And she says, significant facts which add perspectives to the material in this book are, number one, generally, a verbally abusive relationship, the abuser denies the abuse.
Yeah.
I went, oh, hello. That was ringing bells for me. Number two was verbal abuse most often takes place behind closed doors. Ding, 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 ding. Again, that so was ringing the bells for me. And this third one, she said, physical abuse is always preceded by verbal abuse. That's the only time I really noticed her talking about physical aspect of a violent relationship. But so that really stuck with me, and I would say that again and again to anybody that I was working with as an advocate, that, you know, prior, I can imagine if you took some time to reflect that you could find a pattern of verbal abuse before the physical assault. And almost, you know, almost 100% of them were like, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
and
so,
I think that... And
that says something about the long-term prognosis for a verbally abusive relationship, too. The idea that maybe, you know, quite likely, at some point, this will turn into physical.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Any clue?
Well, I was just going to say that I think that the feeling of being personally out of control because all the control is being exerted over left me feeling like I didn't know who I was, almost like a crazy state of mind.
Yeah.
And my so the verbal abuse, I just can't emphasize enough how just those words were so validating. And what I'm curious about is how each of you heard about this book. I'm incredibly amazed at our connectiveness here just about this one book. I mean, I learned so much about each of you just through our show and for our listeners, and if our listeners are even curious, one bit curious about, wow, am I in this relationship that doesn't have the equal power? Really, this book is just a phenomenal life-changing, and my first question was, how both of you heard about it. But the second part that I want to really emphasize to our listeners, I think that there's this feeling of, wow, if I discover something about this relationship, then I have to leave. Or the end of the world to my relationship is going to happen. And I really want to emphasize that that's not the case. This is a self-learning tool that can validate potentially your experience. What you do with it after that is up to you. So I'm not saying that because you discovered maybe you're in a verbally abusive relationship that the end of the world is going to happen.
Right.
To the relationship. So, Heather, how did you first hear about this book?
Well, I did the bookstore search kind of thing.
You walked into the bookstore and said self-help?
Actually, the bookstore had a section on domestic relationships and domestic violence and all of that, you know, under marriage
really?
And relationships and da-da-da. And
wow.
I saw that, and I thought, huh, I've never heard that term before, the verbally uh-huh. abusive relationship. So I just kind of started flipping through it, and oh, my gosh, bells were ringing. So I purchased it. And one of the things that I particularly like about this is she's just very cut and dried about what some of these are. She's got lists of, you know, common behaviors, lists of how you can feel. She's got lists of general characteristics of verbal abuse. And now as I'm going through it, I have so many things underlined and so many passages highlighted, and I've written comments. You know, like one of the sections she has is about how a verbal abuser can use verbal abuse to sabotage and undermine. And she's got one anecdote where she talks about a woman going back to school, and it seems her husband is constantly saying things to put doubt in her mind. And when she, and I'm on the margin, I just noticed I wrote, like asking the kids, are you all right, whenever he calls. You know,
gosh,
like.
This whole conversation keeps giving me goosebumps. I'm telling you, it's really kind of eerie and phenomenal.
Well, and one of the things that I wanted to talk about, too, or point out about this book is because she does list these general characteristics. It's hurtful. Verbal abuse is hurtful. It attacks the nature and the abilities of the partner. It may be overt or covert, very, very subtle, almost like brainwashing. And you mentioned, Pinkley, the crazy making. I don't know if people have heard that term, but it goes back to an old 1930s movie where a gigolo marries the rich woman and then he wants to convince her she's crazy so he can get control of the money. And so every time she walks downstairs, she'll turn on the gas lights or light them or whatever they did with the gas lights. And he turns them off. And the next time she comes down, she'll say, well, why are the lights out? I turned those lights on. And he'll look at her very sincerely and say, no, they were never on. And just that undermining of her confidence and starting to make her think she actually is insane. And that is a really good descriptor for a lot of the verbal abuse that women encounter.
I first found the book after I had been, I first turned to self-help. Because remember, I don't know if you remember, we've had so many conversations, but I did not identify as being in a violent relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me all those years? So I turned to self-help. And after reading, I'm just going to name some fabulous authors that really turned gave me something new to think about, to point out that it perhaps wasn't me or me only. So I read some incredibly fun books written by a person named Sark, and that's an acronym for Susan Ann something Kennedy. And what drew me to her books, if you haven't read them, Heather Pinkley, you may have seen some of mine, she handwrites her books.
Oh, really?
And she doodles pictures. She does her own illustration. And it is so much fun to read. And it's full of things that you can talk to yourself about. And she's really, really fun. So that was the first one. It was called A Creative Companion, How to Free Your Creative Spirit. And then from her, because she lists a bazillion other authors that inspired her, I found Louise L. Hay, You Can Heal Your Life, another reputation, well-known person in the self-healing, and she is like the godmother of self-affirmations, and that was really impactful. And then I did Simple Abundance by Sarah Bond Brainock, and it was about that time I started going through the volunteer training at the community-based nonprofit domestic violence program that I ended up spending about 20 years with. And it was through them, through that training and their resources, that I found Patricia Evans. And then it really, what doubled the interest in this book was I also went to the Displaced Homemaker class, and they had given a grant to the YWCA to purchase books to hand out to survivors, victims who came to the program, and let them take them home as a resource. And this was the book that the program bought, and they bought about 20 copies of it, and they actually handed it out to the people who came to them to ask for assistance in figuring out what was going on in their life. And so those things just really gelled for me, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, not only is this impacting me a lot, this book, The Verbally Abusive Relationship, but it's now going to impact and the deal was, say, read it, keep it, do what you need to, and then pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, this is really a cool way to spread the word to people that it's more than a physical assault, because nobody ever talked about anything but the physical assault.
Yes, yeah.
And so, go ahead.
I think even today, a lot of people don't consider verbal abuse abusive. And yet the studies show that women who have experienced both physical and emotional or verbal abuse would much rather be hit than to experience that verbal and emotional abuse again.
That answer? Do we answer your questions, Connie Sue?
I think so. It's interesting. I mean, I started out with a self-help section, and I remember calling a crisis line for a domestic violence shelter, the one that I currently am working with, and they couldn't even really. The person on the phone really, I would ask is. I was looking for the answer that book gave me, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really define myself as an abused woman. I just knew that I was crazy. I was feeling absolutely unmanageably crazy and couldn't understand. I mean, one minute it was, you're great. The next minute is you can't do anything right. And so it just really propelled me into understanding what the verbal and emotional and the psychological assaults can do to your soul and to your spirit. The other book that I want to mention real quickly that I found incredibly helpful shortly after that was one of the biggest struggles I had with my faith. And the guys that I married under, the Christian values of until death do us part.
Oh, yeah.
Was a very simple book called Keeping the Faith. And the author of this is Marie M. Fortune, F-O-R-T-U-N-E. And it's a guide for Christian women facing abuse. And it's a very small book, but it was just incredibly helpful outlining the passages that are often misused and converted into the convenience of an abuser. And it's a guide not only for someone who might be experiencing this, but it's also written for counselors and pastors to help understand the cycle of domestic violence.
Yeah, I would definitely endorse that book as well, Connie Sue. Reverend Marie Fortune is a shero in my book. She stands high on a pedestal. She's really the first ministerial professional person I ever heard talk about the connection between religion and being in a violent relationship and how impactful it was to people who got their hands on this book. It's, mm-hmm. You said it's a simple book. It's not a simple book. It's really deep. In my opinion, and meaningful. It is a small book. It doesn't look presumptuous.
Maybe that's what I was looking for. It's a very small book. It's not something that is going to intimidate any reader. And it's actually printed in several different languages.
Yes.
But the content of the book is very powerful and very impactful.
Absolutely, absolutely. And she, in fact, I would travel to hear her speak.
Wow. I wish I'd known about that yesterday, ladies. Just yesterday I did an interview on a radio show about domestic violence and religion and clergy. And, boy, I wish I'd had that.
Oh,
I'm going to put a shout out for the website. It's called Faith Trust Institute. Working together to end sexual and domestic violence. And this organization is actually out of Seattle, Washington. But, yes, she is the founding mother, I think, of making the connection between faith and how that can impact you in so many ways in keeping you in an abusive relationship or not. I mean, it's a interconnection between someone's spirituality and belief,
mm-hmm.
and she works with many, many faith organizations, just not grounded in Christianity, but I think that's pretty much where she started.
Yeah.
I should check out the
board of directors for the Faith Trust Institute. There's Jewish rabbis and Buddhists and all faiths, Episcopal, everything, and it's just phenomenal the way, I mean, just to hear someone in that place of authority, if you have a faith practice in your life, to hear someone that has that high opinion, that high authority in your life, say to you that verbal abuse and sexual abuse and physical abuse is not acceptable in any way. It's not in the Bible. It's not in the Torah. It's not in the Quran. And here's why. It's so powerful. It's so eloquent and such a mind changer as well. And I think that's what both these books that we've talked about so far are just incredible about, giving us a reframe for long-held, sometimes damaging social and cultural norms.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, Pinkley, just as you added a little aside when we were talking about the other book, I'd like to add that on this one. If a woman is feeling, or a listener is feeling like she can't possibly do certain things or leave her marriage or seek help from certain people, whatever it is, and still maintain the tenets of her faith, I think that, you know, don't be worried. There are always ways to keep your faith, keep your tenets of your beliefs, and still be safe.
Absolutely. And I think that when people are exploring or wanting to discover aspects of a relationship, these are only guides or resources. It doesn't mean that you have to leave. And I'm just such an outspoken advocate about not making that assumption or that connection automatically, that if you're in a domestic violence relationship, then you have to leave. I want you to be safe, and there's ways to safety plan. This is more about your own self-awareness and taking all of that incredible guilt, feeling of crazy, feeling of anger that manifests through uncertainty, that this is not about you. This is about someone else's will of having or needing power and control over you. And you don't have to accept that. So these are guides. They're resources, and where they've helped us, three survivors, three women, three ways, three divas, that it's just absolutely, like Deb says, it gives me goosebumps to think that we've all shared this experience over this one resource that gave us the information and affirmation that we needed to make the changes in our life, and they were all very different.
Yep.
So it's just...
And we came to them in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like we all had the same path to these books, but they came to us at a time in our life when we needed it most, I guess, and the information and material in these books presented by the authors was really meaningful and impactful.
Well, I'd like to mention another book that was really, really had an impact on me. And I don't know how many people are familiar with it. When I mentioned it, you two, of course, were familiar with it. But it's called When Men Batter Women. And it's basically a narrative based on a study out of the UW, University of Washington. And it is by, I guess the full title is When Men Batter Women, New Insights into Ending Abusive Relationships, by Jacobson and Gottman, Gottman. And what was really pivotal about this book for me is when I was first learning about domestic violence and what it means, people were talking about the cycle of abuse, where you would have a honeymoon phase where everything was wonderful, and then you'd have a tension phase where things were starting to get, you know, you were starting to feel the tension building, and then you would have some sort of explosive episode by the abuser. My relationship was never like that. I never had any kind of a honeymoon phase. And so when I was, you know, learning about domestic violence, and everybody would keep talking about this cycle of domestic violence, I thought, well, you know, maybe I just wasn't abused. Maybe I really wasn't abused, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And when I encountered this book basically, based on studies that they did at UW, the authors talk about types of abusers, that not all abusers are exactly the same. Not all of them, you know, will have that honeymoon phase. Not all of them, you know, will experience jealousy. That there are different types of abusers. And what did he call them? I'm flipping through real quick to remember what he called
them.
Cobras
and pit bulls.
Yeah, cobras and pit bulls.
He puts them in two categories.
Yeah, yeah. And so he talked about cobras and the way that they abuse. He talked about, compared them to pit bulls, which had different characteristics, all of whom are abusive. You know, I think the cobras, they're incapable of feeling abuse. They lack a conscience. They do not experience any empathy. They don't experience soft emotions. And they're really incapable of forming truly intimate relationships with others. They don't fear abandonment. Pit bulls, though, do. Pit bulls are emotionally dependent on their wives, and what they fear most is abandonment. They're the ones that get all jealous. And I suspect that there are probably other types of categories of abusers, but these two that were defined in this book just really spoke to me, because I just kept going, yep, 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 that's it, you know.
That's it.
And so it really helped me understand that, you know, this wasn't just about me, that there was some a lot of stuff going on with him.
And I think that's a pivotal statement that you just made, Heather, that it's not just about you or me or Pinkley or anybody who's going through these types of relationships. It's the other person. And it's hard when you're in a relationship to realize that sometimes the other person has to be the one making the changes. I don't know if it's because we're socially raised to think that women are responsible for that, or that that we're caregivers or whatever those things are, but it was so hard for me to say, I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
My partner did.
Yeah.
And so that's really a pivotal and a very powerful moment in a person's, path or transition or journey to wherever it is they want to be as a human being. Is that I am in a relation with someone, I love someone who has to take responsibility for their own actions. I don't. And that's
mm-hmm.
really powerful. Don't you think so, Connie Sue?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's such a hard concept, because then that puts you in a position of also being responsible for how you operate and behave in
right.
the world.
Right.
And we are, I mean, I can speak for myself. I was truly brought up as being the nurturer, the caretaker. Socially, I think I was just, in an era or a time when that's what women did. I mean, we took care of our partners. And
And everybody else in the world, too, by the way.
And everybody else in the world, absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
And so you lose sight of who you are and the ability to really take care of yourself. You don't have to think about that. Sometimes it's easier to take care of other people.
Mm-hmm.
But then
yeah.
all of a sudden it leaves you feeling or needing to look at yourself and the responsibility that you have to yourself about taking care of yourself. And I struggle with that.
Yeah.
To this day.
This conversation reminds me of one of my favorite quotes by Dr. Maya Angelou, which is, when you know better, you do better. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about here, Connie Sue, is that once we as the survivor / victim, however we identify ourselves, recognize that each human being has the power to monitor their own behavior, then yes, that does put some pressure on us as human beings to say, oh my God, I have been accepting that. I didn't know I was accepting that behavior or that treatment of me. And I have some choices to make here. And not all of those choices are going to be fun or positive or easy. In fact, most of them are not any of those characteristics. They're
right.
all hard and difficult and scary and frightening and lonely. But it still is a very powerful place to be in your life when you can come to that point and say, I recognize that person has power to change their behavior if they choose to, and I have the power to change my behavior if I'm used to. And now that I know it, I'm going to do it. So I think that's a really important piece of our conversation today, too.
Well, knowing it is one thing. That's on the intellectual basis, but the doing it is the hard part. And I think that is where, and like I said, today, even to this day, I struggle with that. And it's a, you know, you two described yourself as late bloomers, and I was also a late bloomer. So it's really about changing your ideas and thoughts of the world. And that's an incredibly hard journey, and that's why I say to people, you know, just because you have discovered or think that you're in an abusive relationship, of course I want you to be safe, but that does not mean that you have to leave. There are so many reasons why, which we've talked about in some of our previous shows, why women don't leave. That it's not that simple either-or situation. Again, what we're talking about is finding resources and just help discovering a self-discovery of a person's own worth or self-being, and that it's not, you don't have to accept it. The other book I want to point out, too, is Why Does He Do That?
Yes, Heather.
I was just flipping through that by Lundy Bancroft.
Yeah, so do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, I would love to, but you brought it up, so you have something you need to say?
No, actually, I have to say I'm getting ready to move, so all of my books are pretty much packed away, but that was another book that popped up in my chronological list of things that I had read or gone through. It's called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry and Controlling Men.
Yeah. What I really liked about that book is just she lists, Lundy is a male, I think, isn't he? He lists characteristics, like nothing is ever his fault. He's self-centered. And, of course, he lists other, you know, those are just the tops of the, he goes on to explain what he means by that. He gets serious too quickly about the relationship. He intimidates you when he's angry. And that intimidation, I think, is real significant. He has negative attitudes toward women. He has double standards. He treats you differently around other people. He appears to be attracted to vulnerability. I mean, he just lists all these characteristics. And for me, since I was reading this at a time when I was trying to figure out what was happening to me, I just kind of went, yes, 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 you know. And it was so good for me. And the other thing that I really highlighted all over the place in this book is, and this was the first time I'd actually heard it put this way, abuse is not his goal, but control is. And he finds himself using abuse to gain the control he feels he has a right to.
Uh-huh. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well said, Mr. Lundy Bancroft.
Yeah. He doesn't consider manipulation abusive. So there are so many key nuggets in that, and again, that's Why Does He Do That by Lundy Bancroft, and that was just pivotal for me as well. I don't want to dominate, but there's one other book that I hope that we can mention a little bit.
Go for it.
And that is Not to People Like Us, Hidden Abuse in Upscale Marriages. Now, I know that a lot of women who are married to CEOs or physicians or people who we normally associate with having financial security, they face a particular disadvantage when they find out or when they learn that they're in an abusive relationship. One is just because he has money doesn't mean they do or that they have any control over it. And yet, in my experience, a lot of group support groups, a lot of shelter folks seem to assume that if the woman comes from financial security in the family, that somehow or other it's just not quite as bad for her. And in some respects, it's not. But in other respects, it's even worse. For example, he has money to fight. Just because he's rich doesn't mean she is. She doesn't get as much empathy. It costs her more to admit what's going on, because not only is she about going to lose her husband if she leaves, she's going to lose her social circle, her friends, you know, and maybe even her family, who place a lot of importance on that social status. So I just wanted to point out this book because I think there is a lot of abuse in upscale families that's not recognized because the costs for that woman are too high. And I think that there are costs that aren't recognized by friends and family and support groups that the upper-scale woman could use help with. I think a lot of times those women feel pretty isolated.
Well, I agree with that, and I appreciate you bringing that up. But I want to say that even though I had no social status and we had no money, it still was painful to give up what we had, what I thought we had.
Yeah.
And so there are still many similarities, no matter what your economic situation is. The most common thing about that is either whether you're poor or you're wealthy is that you as the survivor or victim, you're not in charge of the money. You're not going to be able to take that money with you. So if you decide to leave, if that's where you're going with that, then you are immediately penniless.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I don't think it's on anybody's bucket list to say in their lifetime that here's something that I want to experience. I want to go live in a domestic violence shelter. You know,
yeah,
that is not on our bucket list. So if you've led a life where you sort of had resources and some economic support, I mean, you're not going to think of going to the shelter. You're just not going to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be open to you. You know, that's not in your choices, your list.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out because I think sometimes women who have a lot of financial investment, you know, or dependency or whatever, it's always significant in their choices. But I think sometimes we don't appreciate that just because a woman has resources or her husband does doesn't mean she does. So that's
well,
not
I have a book that I'd like to throw out here. And this, I didn't pick this up until I reached my academia phase. But it still was one of those that gave me a lot of background information. My disciplines are gender studies, history, and culture. And this book really filled me in on the history of the battered women's movement. The name of the book is Women and Male Violence, and it's written by Susan Schechter, who I adore and hold on a pedestal as well. She's no longer with us. She passed away, battled with cancer. But the subtitle is The Visions and Struggles of the Battered Women's Movement, and this book is deep. It will help a person who is maybe we've gone through our victim-survivor stage and we've gone through our phases where we're now feeling a little more self-sufficient and our self-esteem is higher, and we want to understand, why did I go through this? Why did my mother's generation go through that? Why did my grandmother's generation go through that? And it really helped frame it in a social and cultural context, political context, and history. And it was really, really, it's a Bible to me. I just got so much information and so much validation from this that it's a book that I highly recommend if you want to understand how the personal is political. She really reframes that well for anybody who's ready to go to that next stage. And isn't the stage where you want to make a difference in the world, you know, where I've already kind of done my self-healing and I've secured myself and my family or whatever that looks like for you, and now I want to make changes in the big world? This was really helpful for me in that way. Have either of you read this book?
No, I just wrote down the title of it here. But, yeah, that sounds wonderful because we do kind of phase into that. It's like, you know, the rebuilding kind of thing.
Yeah, I think Connie has heard me refer to this quite a bit. And in any of my writings, there's quotes from it in here. And Susan Schechter's, this book is actually out of print, so you'll have to go to a bookstore, a used bookstore, here in the Northwest, we have Powell's or Amazon.com or whatever, but Women and Male Violence by Susan Schechter. Powerful book.
Well, I wanted to just point out a couple of other books that were helpful to me when I was still in the trying to understand this phase. One is No Visible Wounds by Mary Susan Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the subtitle is Identifying Non-Physical Abuse of Women by Their Men. And
right.
There were a number of insights in there. For example, one quality emotional abusers have in common is the ability to zoom in on a woman's weak spot, to use it as a weapon that matters, and to use as a weapon what matters to her most. In many cases, it is her children.
Yeah.
So I found that really insightful. And then back on the trying to get beyond it phase is Ginny McCarthy's Getting Free.
Oh,
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Ginny lives in Seattle.
I know. I'm on her email list. I feel so privileged.
Yeah, I am too. I've actually had the honor of meeting her and sitting next to her. I was so pleased with myself.
Yeah, I know. Well, Pinkley, do you have any other?
I hold all these people in very high esteem, and it's just awe-inspiring when I'm in the same room with them for me. It's very inspiring and motivating.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. I mean, when we think about the insights that these women have helped us with, I mean, you've got to be in awe. Pinkley, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation here. Are there any other books that you wanted to mention?
Well, there are several. I think I've got more on healing than I do on, and I think that's an important part, is just healing. I think one of the things that a while ago I discovered, well, actually I discovered it through the process of pain, great deal of pain, is the healing power of writing.
Mm.
And Deb and I were both actually interviewed and put into a book called With Pen in Hand, The Healing Power of Writing by Henriette Ann Clouser.
Yeah.
And I would just really encourage our listeners that a journey of discovery and healing and what you do with your pain is a journey that is unlike anyone else's. You are not going to experience the same thing. And what I tell survivors, which is the most important thing I think a survivor can do, is to listen to their intuition. And
yes.
Our intuition and our inner voice, our inner guide, is usually so damaged in an abusive relationship that it's almost uncomfortable to sit still and listen to your inner voice.
Yeah.
I chose the path of writing. I've chosen other things, activism and whatnot. But as a survivor, you have the ability, you do have the power of making choices for yourself. And I think that all three of us agree that if a change is going to occur in a relationship, that can be the most dangerous time, so I don't want to minimize that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is the ability, just having an awareness that this is not you, could be life-changing for someone.
Oh, yes. I think so too.
So whatever tools or resources that you tap into, just that awareness, and you can sit and be with that for forever. And be in a relationship until it ends.
Absolutely. I have a particular experience I'd like to share relating to that. And when I was an advocate at the community-based program, someone came to me, and she was in her 60s. And she said, I usually begin my conversations with, tell me what brought you here. And she's like, I don't really know. Except that everybody around me was saying that I should find out more about being in an abusive relationship.
Uh-huh.
She had divorced her husband like 5 years earlier and maintained a relationship with him, and actually he passed away from some illness. And so I'm saying that even after you leave a relationship, if you still are thinking it might have been abusive, it probably was abusive,
right.
And I think it would be good for you to acknowledge that and kind of reflect on that and look at that, because she came to me, we had several times together where we would talk about the questions she had, and I would give her resources, and she was a reader, and so, of course, she got some of these books that we've talked about today, and she was amazed at how it helped her just to know what she had been through.
Right.
Even
yeah,
though it was in the past, and she was away from him, and he was actually passed on, she still needed that closure. She still needed that information for herself.
Well, I think you said the word validation, Pinkley, and I think that's what some of these books give us, is validation.
Yes.
We know that we're feeling something's wrong, but we don't know what it is. And reading some of these books and making some self-discovery is wonderful. But as you mentioned, Pinkley, you do move on, and you have to, if you decide to leave, or even if you don't decide to leave, you have to figure out what you're going to do. And I wanted to real quick mention two books that I found useful. One is Lundy Bancroft's When Dad Hurts Mom,
mm-hmm.
Helping Your Children Heal the Wounds of Witnessing Abuse. And It's My Life Now, Starting Over After an Abusive Relationship or Domestic Violence by Mary Kennedy or Meg Kennedy Dugan and Roger Hawk. So those are both really good books that I found. You have one that, you know what? And why doesn't she just leave?
Oh, yes, of course.
Why did we not put that on the top of the list?
Why doesn't she just leave? Real Women, Real Stories, A New Perspective on Domestic Violence by Heather Stark, edited by Heather Stark. And that is, I think, back in the discovery phase, you know, when you're trying to figure out what this is and that you're not alone.
It's a powerful book. All the essays are written by survivors. I'd say 98% of the people involved in that book, Heather, were survivors of domestic violence, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was one of your major points, that you wanted it to be grounded in real-life experience. I had the honor of being one of those essayists, so I'm very proud of the book that you put together, Heather.
Thank you. And I designed it for people who didn't understand. And, of course, their first question is, why doesn't she just get out of there? But I'm surprised that I get a lot of feedback from survivors who say how helpful it was to them. And I think it's because they're in that discovery phase and they realize that they're not alone suddenly. It's not just them.
Yeah.
Pinkley, any final book? Or Deborah, any final book that you want to mention here?
I'm good. We usually end the show with a quote. So, if Pinkley, do you have any final words, Pinkley?
Well, I just want to say that in part of my earning my bachelor's degree, that I wrote a pretty large essay on a program that they call prior learning, where you can.
I think you wrote a book, Connie Sue.
Well, okay. Which I'm going to actually expand on it and turn it into a book. And it was called I Did Leave.
Yeah, very good. Well, and in fact, most women do. They just don't leave when other people think they should, necessarily.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to wait for the book to be published, Pinkley. Any to help support you, let me know.
Yeah, thank you.
To use a quote from Jeanette Rankin. Either of you, have you heard of Jeanette Rankin?
I have, but I don't quite know. I can't place it.
She was the first woman congresswoman, I believe, from Montana in the 1920s. In fact, she holds the distinction of being the only female, the only Congress member to vote against World War I.
That's it. Yes, I remember.
And her quote is this, as a result of doing that: as a woman, I can't go to war, and I refuse to send anyone else. And that's what she wrote in her First Lady in Congress that was written by Hannah Josephson. And she has a couple other ones. She says, this one I really love. You take people as far as they will go, not as far as you would like them to go. That was... So that's what we're hoping to share with our listeners is here's some places you can go at your
exactly.
leisure. A resource
exactly.
for you.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so much self-discovery, so much learning to be done, not only in the process of dealing with an abusive marriage and recognizing it, but also getting out if that's your choice. So thank you so much for joining us today. We are?
Three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
All right. Great show. Talk to you
Okey-doke.
Soon.
Till next week.